Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is a podcast while walking to my friend Simon Fleming. Now, he's very busy and off doing things at Sydney University. He's a professor there. And we've been friends for a long time. Working critically together, I suppose, in the early 90s. I've sent him in sort of long emails, briefing everyone in the sort of, I call them the big crew group, about the progress in various projects. Now, if you're not really paying attention, there's sort of a garble of all projects and different, speaking to different people, it's really difficult to go. Today I sent him just the basic wrap-up equation for the Einstein pendulum, the alpha max of deflection you get, and how that's related to the spin kick and the various functions involved in that. And I got a quick reply saying, have I considered using, I think it's PMAA, or it's basically Perspex, some sort of chemical grade Perspex. I will step back a little bit and say, well, what I'm doing is a podcast while walking. Essentially, I've got sort of, I spend 24 hours a day just rehab, building up, and part of the, and so there's different aspects. There's the projects, there's support, communication. So there's projects one area, support and communication, learning how to speak to people and get projects up and running. And then there's sort of like real small practical things like, to get back to work, this is seeing if I can get and do HSC examinations, or start doing online modules, training modules, just to get myself back up to level. So it's all in a basic package. And like research, I expect to make heaps of mistakes and learn from it. So in communication, I'm going ahead and I'm learning that, particularly if you're from the outside of an area, you have to really focus, get the message simply. If you're from outside an area, people have got a very short bandwidth and they can't listen to a complex message. Now, part of the communication package is these podcasts where I talk and see if I can get coherent on a topic. And in the background for that, I don't know whether it's projects or stuff like that, I've written this software which pumps out the podcasts, and I've adapted that software such that I can give a quiz, and can break it up and break it up into four podcasts as a lesson. It's a quiz lesson. So that's I am actually walking in Glenbrook at night, and there's odd spiders and stuff like that. So that's where it is. So that's why I'm giving a podcast now, why it's a podcast while walking. And even that, I've slowly got the right podcast machine, got the right microphone, and basically got everything schmick for that. So back to the Einstein pendulum, and back to whether we could use Perspex instead of quartz. Now, I've just come out of an experimental regime. I kicked off because the plug for the experiment is this plug my son uses when he's doing his ironing of short shirts, and of course I just unplug it and let him do the ironing, and then bugger off for a walk to get it done. But we've gone through a process where I've learnt to actually quickly make up the samples in the Einstein pendulum. So the Einstein pendulum is this: you have a sample, and you have the along the axis of the field, the field turning north, south, north, south. Sometimes up 10 times a second, 20 times a second, depending on what you're aiming for. And building a production prototype, a concept prototype. Well, getting towards a concept prototype, that is where things come together conceptually, and then I sort of upgrade it all the time. It's two aspects of it. It's building it and also assessing what you want to build it for. And so what happened is I can sort of now make up a fairly good ferrule or weight very quickly. And the way that I do it, best way to explain it, is that there's these pliable spherical fishing tackle beads, which I've discovered, and these are quite soft, and the aim for it is that if you've got a weight on your fishing tackle, the weight can slide down and snap your hook off when you lose the fish. So they've got these things which are pliant and absorbent, so it just means one bead size can fit almost anything. You have to press it down. As it press it down, it actually clamps for a while, and then you can poke it around, and then you can have your little cylinders which are holding the inside, and spin it around and see that your fiber is running true in the center. And when that's there, because the aim of the game is to reduce the all sources of damping and loss, so you've got this break up between damping loss and strain relief. So you can make it absolutely bloody rigid, but if you have anything brittle in the system and it's all rigid, it's a recipe for breaking up. Now, I haven't broken up so far, but just before I've got so the idea is that there's a cue of your torsion pendulum, and the cue is how long it rings for. Also, it's how much it's loss there is. And so what happens is, say, if you've got I don't know, say a 10 degree swing and it loses 2 degree, okay, then but it gets down to 5, the next tumble loses another degree there. So it's the loss is proportional to the strain in the Q formula. And the number of rings to 50% amplitude is set number of rings either multiplied or divided by 4.5, I can't really quite remember, will give you your Q factor. And I think Q a half is the critical one, where it's overdamped, critically damped, and half beyond that it will ring. And I just have to really think about that. So in physics, you do one of the engineers do 50% and have another thing, because they can't, they're measuring things on oscilloscopes. So this Q factor is your loss per ring, and essentially your process is going to give a kick. Your pendulum is going to get a kick as the angular momentum of your electrons change with the magnetic field. That's the theory. So this is a really small effect, and it's easily swamped by even though you build a perfectly symmetrical thing, it's not perfectly symmetrical. It's oh Christ, this is England book. My godfather. Far out. Sorry, there was just someone riding down the main street of Glenbrook in a German helmet in the middle of the night. Okay, so this is a Q factor coming down. So if you have a high Q system, it means you get greater oscillation for the loss. So we'll speed up to go there now. And that's what people have have gone for. Now, why does that HiQ system, now also the more compliant it is, the greater your angle is going to be, you know, where that's going to play out. So very high Q, very stiff system, it's going to build up to a small angle. So it's a trade-off. So if you can have a soft compliant thing, or you can have a very long thing, and you can see where Einstein and the people in the 60s have gone. They've gone for a very stiff, say steel, ideally it could be diamond, it would be the stiffest thing, and very long, so it is quite compliant, but very high Q, so you're getting all the factors towards you. Now, we're in a different type of thing, so the bigger you build it, the bigger your magnetic field exclusion you have to build, because let's look at it. Even though you have a cylinder there and it's rotating, you can't mount it 100% perfectly. So now what you do, it's like a compass, and if you flip the north and south pole of your compass, it will start to move. So it'll pick up your side magnetic field. Now, magnetic field cancellation, oh, this seems really hard. It's not really hard, because you've only got to isolate it in two dimensions, not three. And it's just current going in a coil. You know, you have these boards, these new generation boards here. And like I'm learning really quickly, but I've sort of really gone to the front. So these little Arduino boards, it's basically USB and logic and A to D's and digitals. And then you can put identical boards on top of it. So they've got a row of female plugs, and your shield thing is a board which clips on top of it like a shield, or like a shield, I suppose it's called. So there, it's got male pins which go down and female plugs above it. So it looks like the same board, but it just builds up, and you can build it up in a tower. And you think of various things that you want, and you can buy a battery shield, plug it in, it's a rechargeable one. You can buy a Wi-Fi shield, or you can look at where it's gone. And so the key thing with the Arduino is it's a fairly standard thing. There's shields, and it's got this shield system pinout. Arduino. So there's two things. There's Arduino and Raspberry Pi. Now, Raspberry Pi is very attractive in terms of that you're not seeing things through frosted lenses, and you're downloading the program. The program's there, ready to go. However, the gap is really closing, because you now have the PC Arduino board, which is slightly larger real estate, which is essentially you need. And you can buy the PC board, which has wireless, goes to your network, and HDMI and operating system on it. You know, you're going to have to really get to understand that. Now, the point of that is that we're in a new age, trying to do something slightly different from Einstein. So the things that we've got different going forward, we've got solid-state switching, which means that we can effortlessly, sort of when I did the bad old-day switching, it just jumped around. It was just horrible. Switch to solid state is smooth as. So we've got solid state. There's things that we're aiming for something different. We're aiming for something small, out of the box, that you can give to all universities and all schools, hopefully. You know, the thesis is not worth testing and until we can see whether we can build it. And look, there's the, obviously the benefits of having a go at building it. For me, it's the therapy. In terms of the overall, that third quotient of retraining, that is, if you have to retrain, well, you'll start to look around at what you can do efficiently, and retraining is just learning the modern electronics the kids have got access, should have access to. Now, of course, the teachers and the departments, you know, miles behind, and so was I. I was ahead. Right, but then the 10 years, or I don't know, it's almost unfathomable, 15 years, or 12 years, I'm falling behind. The stuff that I know, which is you get components and hook it up and a PCI and all this type of stuff, that's out of date. So even what I know, and I see some of my children's projects are people who are even more at it than me, teaching what they think is the, it's just not there. Okay, so we're aiming for something different, which is an out-of-the-box demonstration that students can use. It's not too big. And we've got these factors helping. Now, that being said, in the changeover with my... I found a scrap of optical fiber that I had in my shed. So I used to have piles and piles of high techs. This is thermally expanded core fibers produced by my Robert Lab, just thousands of them. And what was going to happen about 2 years ago, I wasn't going to be here anymore. And so it was, do I keep this? No. Your family say, do you really need it? You know, the pressure into the skip it goes. And so all these skips and optical. So I had this one piece of optical fiber, and I took it, and with the coating on it, because I know how delicate it is, put it in, and it was a fairly lossy thing. So not much, possibly a little bit behind from coated wire. Again, coated wire, I hadn't learned how to, the best wire I was using is hook-up wire, and I had to learn how to strip long lengths of the wire with the tools I had at hand. And so, just to get on there, stripping the long lengths of wire, I realised that if I took some wire and wrapped it around my pliers through the teeth, it couldn't close, it limited how much it could close, and then I stripped away and built it. And I was going to take this coated optical fiber thing off, and having looked at it, and as I pulled it off its mount, the mount was glued. I sort of glued it into position, because I sort of know how you mount optical fibers with glue, strain relief, and all that type of stuff. But you know, not aiming for strain relief, because that would be the disaster. I think building any sort of strain relief into a Q system would be, you know, you don't want relief. You want to have the strain go far and go back up, you know, be stored in the system. And so, essentially, obviously, these beautiful soft ferrules, which you can center and true up, as soon as you've done that, you pot it with epoxy, even aerolite. Now, the aerolite I use, which is a soft epoxy. It's a soft epoxy. It's sort of like it's not what I would like. There's the I don't know, UV curing epoxy. This thing, like, it cures like rock solid. Like you'd never get it out again. The beautiful thing with aerolite is that you can just, it doesn't go good. Just get your screwdriver and flip it out. It doesn't bind to any surface. It's like, it's pretty useless epoxy compared to the various glues and epoxies. But I'm not building I'm just building a concept prototype. So when I pulled the thing out, normally you can just pull the optical fibre and it will just pull, leaving the coating up there. And this time it began to pull and stripped the coating upwards, whatever it is. So it left me a length of fibre, which I then whacked it back into the machine and ran it again, and earned its horrendously high Q. It's sort of like you really want a high Q system. And so the same optical fibre thing without the coating, very high Q. It's sort of like a size thermometer. You walk in the room and it oscillates and stuff like that. Any vibration is really bad. So previously I've been able to get away from the oscillation by having it a double torsion pendulum held from above and below and pulled with a huge amount of force, like you bloody and it sits there absolutely still, vibration basically vibration. Look, if you walk around and it, you know, oscillates, but it being held there. You want a out-of-the-box demonstration. So we've got two things. We're aiming for out-of-the-box demonstration thing, and we've got these factors up on Einstein. We've got the solid-state switching, and we've got now lasers, and as pointed out in the equation, you can bounce it off the mirror, then bounce it back onto the same mirror, and keep on bouncing it back and forth, and so a tiny angle will, if you say you were to bounce it back and forth 10 times inside here, a small angle will lead to a huge deviation angle. So we've suddenly got 2 to the N, and let's say just 4. Oh, so it's 2. Well, 2 is what Einstein got here. 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. So, with this, with the lasers and stuff like that, incidentally, trying to think of, well, do I go capacitive sensitive or do I go lasers? And of course, laser has this thing up that you can bounce it multiple times. So if I've got two parallel mirrors and I've got the laser bouncing in back and forth between two parallel mirrors, I'm measuring the angle of one mirror to the other. If I bounce it back and forth many times, I can get a huge angular variation for free. Now that hasn't so far been picked up in the literature. I'm sure that I will read a paper, but unfortunately, guess what? It's all paywall. So it's not that I, you know, there's no way that I can go ahead, head after it. So that means that, a optical fiber, so there's, an optical fiber with the coating stripped off has a much lower, a much higher, lower loss, higher Q. And so you can imagine that, obviously a spring, if something wants to move with respect to something else and slips and, you know, grabs and moves, it's not the standard friction. You've got a force over distance, things are moving, it's all pretty sloppy. So fishing line was the easiest to start off with, and that was sort of a nightmare. Not a nightmare, it was very, very easy to build, looked really sweet, but sort of didn't have very high loss. And so you've got losses at 3 points. You've got a loss within your torsion bar, and you can easily have that if you've got multiple materials. So composite materials are not the way to go with it, because if you've got different things strain, you could, as long as you're just moving it there, then you have a loss above and below where it's anchored to the actual sample and then to the apparatus. Now, you can essentially reduce the loss of your ends by increasing the length. That's one aspect you can do. What I'm trying to say is that we're going for a different target, and we have a number of factors up our sleeve that we can apply. It looks so going there. Also, I just go on the laser. Look at with the Arduino PC board. That's for $20. You can get a camera. Now, unfortunately, it's well, the image analysis that I thought. Yeah, I just can't imagine downloading LabVIEW machine vision executable into a chip that size. I think it will have to. Yeah, I don't know how it would go. I suppose you could write something. It's a pretty obvious if you've got a spot and a camera doing. And really, your Wii remote is very much like that. Your Wii has got a camera and chip, so it can easily be done. I just have to really think about it. And ultimately, what you really could do is that you could have a Wii camera, you know, and a little infrared light be moved back and forth. I'm pretty sure it would work. But let's get back to it. So, can we use Perspex as our medium? And so, equivalently, that would be somewhere in terms of resonance between a piece of nylon, which is like rubber, you know, like Perspex is a little stretchy than rubber, but be less good than the actual wrap-up wire, which I don't know is some sort of alloy, and it's got a fairly high stiffness. The idea is that it bends and you can wrap things up and it doesn't spring back. So I don't know how that would go. So the answer is, I think we can use Perspex, but Perspex has this ability which is not, one, it's robust, two, is that you can form it into a tube. That is, in the draw tower technique. And I don't know if it can be done, but you start off with a Perspex tube at the top, you heat it up and you draw it down to a small tube, and your torsion coefficient, your torsional stiffness is proportional to, so for a rod, it's the radius to the fourth power. So if you double the radius, it's 2, 4, 8, 16 times stiffness. And the other thing is that in terms of your torsional effect, the other thing that tells you is that all the torsion that you are buying is in that outer skin. The rest is just dead for the go, and it's unsurprising to know that the formula for a tube is T cubed times the mean sort of diameter of it, of that thickness, because that's just how you calculate the torsion. Now, of course, if you get the thickness such that it is goes on the mean thickness, it will eventually, the two formulas match. But D cube means that you can get a tube with a thin wall, and the advantage of a tube and a thin wall is that it can have low torsional stiffness, but in terms of it can actually just support your sample. So you hold something down a tube, it's not going to sway, which is different from supporting swaying is it supported at one point and moving. Here it's swaying is expansion and compression of either side that you're going to sway. It's just very much different from it. So there is great potential for a thin tube, and just from my experience, if you're really desperate, you could plate it with chrome and then copper, electroplate it with copper, build it up that way, and then dissolve the inner tube if you're really, if you wanted to convert it to metal. But the important thing here is that a tube, besides being more robust and perspex being particularly soft, so you could have sort of a reasonable length of it, it also binds to the sample and to the apparatus over a long area, so you can and you can bind it with something of equal softness to it. So like you can, I mean, ideally, I don't know whether you want to do this, but ideally you can sort of flare it up a little bit and bind it. So you could have high, or you could remove one form of loss. Now, we know that you get, this is interesting, there's some, for some reason there's sunflowers out here. And I don't know how they got there, why they're there. If it's like a pest in the Blue Mountains up here. Sunflowers. Okay, so it's unclear why it all goes together. There's just, so there is a potential window to do perspex, but a thin wall tube means that rather than a very small amount of perspex, it doesn't get you very much above quartz or any sort of plastic that you can buy. But a thin wall tube has the advantage that we're perhaps losing some Q. I can't imagine it having the same Q as quartz fiber. But if you're going to lose it, you can make it relatively lightweight for what it's doing, because it's mostly hollow. So the problem with steel versus quartz is that when you're looking at the your thing, everything you add, every dab of glue, everything is a parasitic mass for that you have to drag along and move. So if you've got a big, huge, heavy bar going down, well, yes, you might be able to get it to go up, but you got to consider the weight of what you're moving around. So there is a prospect of it, and I'm just trying to think of basically how it could be done. Now, I suppose what I could do to model it is get some overhead transparency paper, which is thin, wrap it in a circle. That would be interesting. Wrap it in a circle. Yeah, like you can imagine, it would have to be very thin. So I haven't done the actual calculations. So you can get the T cube down, and so you've got something like that length of it, and see how much you can turn. I suppose another example of it, you could get something very much like a McDonald's straw, and see how much it would, how much torsion you can get if it's very, very thin. So you can imagine it's got to be incredibly thin. But the advantage is that you can imagine if you have that same amount of material, as you expand it, you're increasing its torsional stiffness. Okay, you know, you're removing this, the dead weight stuff, increasing its torsional stiffness. So, yep, that's sort of, it'd be hard to imagine how you could make something so, you know, make a tube which was able to display some sort of torsional thing. Now, the problem with torsional tube, like, it's very small, not torsional stuff, but it will have the ability to collapse. Obviously, like, if I get a Coke can, I twist it, it will go inwards. So you've got all those problems for very small oscillations, and we're talking at most a fraction of a degree here. I don't think you can get the catastrophic pulling in stuff. It's a very long long thing, and it's the high Q factor. So I'm just really trying to think about how you could do it. But what I'll do is I'll look at a straw and see just how you could achieve it, achieve something there. So you may want a tube, but it has to be, I suppose, getting down to a very small aspect, a small diameter. So I don't know quite how you can do it. And if it's rubbery and soft, it's like jelly. Jelly oscillates. I don't know if it's got a high Q factor. You just watch your jelly oscillates, and it stops oscillating because of the air it's in, obviously, oscillating. But it also transfers stuff, and it's not necessarily that you put it in one mode. It's also the sharing of different modes of it. And so it could well be that a cylinder has low mode conversion, and it'll be a great thing to use. Now, I don't know whether I'll actually send this to Simon to listen to, because it's probably worthwhile for me to do a few experiments first before getting back to him, and to see what we can find out about cylinders in terms of the thickness that we're possibly looking at, and if we can think laterally and think about whether we can take a straw, for instance, a plastic straw, and see whether that could be a high Q pendulum. Somehow, I don't think, but I'll do that work first, then I'll get back to Simon and see whether we can do that. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll get this one out.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.